From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up.
What a glorious day. Remember this moment. This is history. President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history.
That was Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today. We'll talk about the historic dedication of the new U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem with Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, a member of the Israel Victory Caucus. And despite the growing backlash from parents over graphic sex ed curriculum, the left is not slowing down. The Fairfax County School Board in Virginia is about to declare that biological sex is meaningless. A majority of school board members appear ready to approve and greenlight radical recommendations received from its stacked Family Life Education Curriculum Advisory Committee. Might this misguided view of sexuality be headed your way? We'll talk about it with one of the lone voices standing up for parents and common sense on the Fairfax County School Board, School Board Member Elizabeth Schultz. She'll be here with the details. Also, we'll be taking your phone calls on this Monday afternoon right here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. Hey, by the way, pastors, we've got about a half a dozen seats left for our exclusive pastors-only briefing, which begins next week, May the 23rd through the 25th in Washington, D.C. One of the most encouraging conferences that you can attend. This is our 15th year. If you've not been here, well, maybe one of these spots is for you. To find out how you can be a part of it, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right. Oh, by the way, before we get to our first guest, last week, as we mentioned, was the starting gun for the primary elections. Well, this week, actually tomorrow, we have four more states with primaries: Idaho, Nebraska, Oregon, and Pennsylvania. All right, so if you live in one of these four states, this is how you engage in our participatory process of government. You've got to be engaged. Idaho, Nebraska, Oregon, Pennsylvania. By the way, Pennsylvania has some newly redrawn congressional districts, so you need to make sure that you know what district you're in. It could have changed. Now, if you need a voter guide to find out who's on the ballot, where they stand on the issues, you can go to frcaction.org for our 50-state voter guide, frcaction.org. If you forget that, just go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, so it's the time to be equipped and be engaged, be prepared. We are all participants in this form of government that we have. All right, it was 70 years ago on this date, May 14th, that Israel, after 1,900 years of not existing as a nation, became a nation once again, first time in history. They returned to their native land to speak their native tongue. Well, the U.S. government, under President Harry Truman, was the first nation to recognize Israel's statehood. And it was 51 years ago, on June the 7th, that the reunification of Jerusalem took place. And today, U.S. policy finally came into alignment with Israel's own claims of Jerusalem as their capital, but more importantly, biblical truth. President Donald Trump joined the event via video and spoke this morning.
Israel is a sovereign nation with the right, like every other sovereign nation, to determine its own capital. Yet for many years, we failed to acknowledge the obvious, the plain reality that Israel's capital is Jerusalem. On December 6, 2017, at my direction, the United States finally and officially recognized Jerusalem as the true capital of Israel. Today, we follow through on this recognition and open our embassy in the historic and sacred land of Jerusalem.
Joining us now, Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell. He is a member of the Israel Victory caucus and a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks, Tony, and what a historic day it is.
It certainly is, and I know some of your colleagues were able to be there. I was just there 2 weeks ago, was not able to make the trip over, but watched a very significant day. How, from a foreign policy standpoint, we'll address the historical significance, but let's talk about it first from the standpoint of a foreign policy perspective. Some saying this is going to make it harder to bring about peace in the Middle East. What do you say?
No, I don't think so. No harder than it's been with the Palestinian question, really for decades. If it's not this issue, it is some other issue. And I think it's interesting to see the reaction of the kingdoms around the area. You're not seeing blood in the streets or protest in Riyadh or Amman or the different places. And I think the realization is, from an American standpoint, for the last three decades, the 1990s, 2000s, and now just last year, we have repeatedly and bipartisanly sensed and put into law from Congress that we recognize Jerusalem as the capital. And each year, that has never been rescinded. In fact, each year it has been furthered, and only now have we seen a president sign the orders and doing the will of the Congress and the like. And so I really applaud President Trump for taking that step. And as Prime Minister Netanyahu had related to us, look, you've got the Knesset there. You have their judicial Supreme Courts there. You've got the Prime Minister there. You have everything there. It just makes no sense that as everyone recognizes and operates with Jerusalem as the capital, and we've seen it historically as well, that we're playing this pretend game out of sensitivity, to all the parties concerned except those that have the strongest at stake, which is Israel.
Well, and the President Trump acknowledged that this morning, saying that every nation, every sovereign nation has a right to declare what their capital will be. And this is the only country, in fact, one of our strongest allies, though, the only country that we have not come into complete alignment with their declaration. And I know it's been on the books for over 20 years, almost 25 years, where we recognize Jerusalem as the capital, but we've failed to take the action to back it up. In many ways, I see that as, politicians wanting to have their cake and eat it too, to play both sides of the fence. And finally, we have a leader saying, no, we've said it, we mean it, and we're going to do it.
Well, and we were excited to hear some of the promises when the president was, after he had gotten the Republican nomination, and he had made this one of his campaign issues in the race against Mrs. Clinton. And we were cautiously optimistic on that. And after he was elected, we repeatedly encouraged anyone from the White House and the president and others, Mr. President, act on this. Do it. Do it. There's never a better time than now. Do it. And we had written letters. We had provided encouragement. And it is an incredibly historic day. No less amazing, currently, but, certainly not as amazing as Israel on this anniversary 70 years ago coming into existence. And there we had Harry Truman, who was so strong in his support to Israel. And I think it's important, too, Tony, that listeners understand, that this was Israel's creation was not, something where they just appeared out of guilt over the Holocaust and the like. Quite the contrary. All of that area and territory was, under the Ottoman Empire. After it broke up after World War I, it was put forth in a mandate under the British, and they decided to, with that territory from the old Ottoman Empire, with the Balfour Declaration and others, to do exactly what you see coming to fruition, which was a Jewish homeland that would be legitimately accepted and carved out and done by the legitimate states around the world. Very important.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, my guest. He represents the 5th Congressional District of the Sooner State, discussing the historic activities that took place today in Jerusalem with the dedication of the new U.S. embassy, multipurpose. Was a consulate. Now it's the embassy until the new structure is built. Historic in that we are recognizing that Jerusalem, as the, by the way, the GOP platform made very clear, that is the eternal, undivided capital of Israel. Congressman, let me ask you this from a standpoint of this status quo that we've had for three decades, saying one thing but not actually following through, trying to placate the voices there in the in that region of the world that do not recognize Israel's right to exist. Might this show of definitive strength and purpose actually bring about a more managed peace with some of those elements?
Well, the opportunity is certainly there, and I know, without going into specific detail, we had quietly met with leaders from the surrounding states and others, and asked, when a lot of this was brewing, what their impressions were of it, and without directly quoting anybody or what nation they might have been from, they felt that this was something whose time had come, and it was, probably just a recognition of reality. Now, that's not to say that, we will be any less affected in being able to provide services and others to those that will be in the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. Those of us that have been there, the consulate operated where you had those under the Palestinian Authority that could enter in one side, and then you had the Jewish citizens or Israeli citizens, regardless of their faith, would have to go to Tel Aviv. So they'll have to make, some minor adjustments, and they've done that for the opening here. So from a State Department point of view, it will change very little other than it will be a great relief to the Israeli citizens who now actually can get consulate services right there in Jerusalem instead of having to travel all the way to Tel Aviv. So I don't know that that people realize that.
Yeah, that is significant from a very practical standpoint. I too met with some of the leaders in that region, and it was interesting in the private conversations. I think you're right. They kind of characterized it as, they weren't going to be cheerleaders for it, but they realized what was coming into place. It was interesting, though, some publicly making louder statements of opposition, I think, to try to placate some of the more rebellious factions within their own population. But I do think that this really reshuffles the deck when it comes to our foreign policy now going forward.
Well, it does, and I'm not sure which is worse, saying that you support it and then never doing it, or say that you don't and then you quietly allow it to happen.
Right.
So, as our politicians have felt strongly both ways on this issue for 25 years, it's nice for all of us that have been very assertive in saying, look, this is the policy and the will of the Congress and the people of the United States, and seeing a president act on it, it's a historic day.
It absolutely is, and thank you for joining us to talk about it today, Congressman
Steve
Russell. All right, have a great evening.
Take care.
All right, find out more about our friend Steve Russell. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, radical sex ed policy still on the march. Is it coming to your school board? Let's talk about it next. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. In all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, the Fairfax County School Board in Virginia held a work session earlier today. And reports are a majority of the school board members support recommendations that would replace the term biological sex with sex assigned at birth. Now, they want to teach children that they are not born male or female. They want to remove abstinence as the only 100% effective method for prevention of sexually transmitted diseases. But that's not all. There's more in this curriculum that's being pushed. And you know, you've seen the pushback from parents across the country to this graphic radical sex ed, but the left is marching on. Now they want to remove a very offensive word. They want to remove the word clergy from the category of trusted adults that students can contact and talk with about sexually related issues. This is all about kind of embedding this gender fluidity as the new social construct. Joining us now is Elizabeth Schultz. She is a member of the Fairfax County School Board, a lone voice for common sense and parents on the school board. Elizabeth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Mr. Perkins, thank you for having me on this afternoon.
All right, I know you are in the midst of this right now, having been in these workshops. Give our listeners a sense of what's happening.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate that the staff within the school system works with a committee that is a committee of the superintendents, not a committee of the board, to develop curriculum over the course of a year. And it's presented to us in one day, and we're slotted, you know, basically about an hour and a half for 12 board members to ask comprehensive questions. And yet our time is cut off because it's more important to have a comprehensive sex ed curriculum than actually have a comprehensive discussion with the board members who lead and establish the policy. In the end, it won't matter. It'll be rubber stamped by the board. And the unfortunate thing is that you have a situation where, you know, an affirmative acknowledgement from a parent is required to send a child, you know, for example, on a field trip, or that the parent has received the student's rights and responsibilities document, which is how the student will be disciplined, frankly, in many regards related to this. But you don't have to have affirmative consent to teach your child the most sensitive and the most, you know, potentially breaching, you know, matters of religious personal freedoms or cultural or other identities that really impart value from a family. And instead, you know, parents are relegated to, if you can figure out how, you can opt your child out. And it's a real problem when all known objective truth and reality since the beginning of time, which is, you know, there are men and there are women, is reduced in a single sentence to, you know, a strike through of text to say, now we're going to be talking about sex assigned at birth. And if it can happen, you know, in the 10th largest school system in the nation, you better bet that it's going to happen, if it hasn't already happened, across the country.
Elizabeth, you, I sense a bit of frustration in your voice, and I can only imagine, you know, this sounds like a classic case of the tail wagging the dog from a standpoint of the school board that you're a part of, elected by the citizens of the community to set the policies for the school board. Now you have the superintendent basically front-loading this quote-unquote community panel or committee that is presenting this information to you with the expectation that you're just going to sign off on it.
Well, it's actually even worse than that, because the board members each get to appoint one person to this committee that has 33 people on it, 33 people, and so only 12 are representative of the board. The student member of the board gets 4 appointees, one for each grade in high school. So the student member who doesn't vote on our board or actually can't vote, you know, publicly, is not 18, has a 400% increase in terms of the influence on the committee than do we. And then there are various and sundry appointments from the community that frankly get very much stacked. It isn't necessarily the superintendent, but the deck is totally stacked to ensure that one ideology makes its way through and that this isn't actually representative of the community's values. We don't even really know what the community's values are, because this is a group that meets. The community doesn't even know that it's happening. And off you go for a year, you develop all of these changes, and you strike out things like offensive words that children shouldn't hear, like clergy, and say, well, you know, we know that's covered under trusted adult, but we're just going to actually take the word out. Where is the comprehensive engagement of parents of children in grades preschool through 12th grade? Do you understand what your children are being taught if you don't take the onus on yourself to opt them out? And even if you do opt them out, you know, family life education curriculum in the classroom is not Vegas. You know, what happens in that classroom doesn't stay in that classroom. That immediately flows over. I just received an alert that the Falls Church City School System, which is a completely different school system but is located in Fairfax County, is having a major investigation into sexting of children at very, very young ages, sending nude pictures of themselves and each other. You know, is this potentially the indication that we're hypersexualizing children at younger and younger ages, and that maybe we need to be a little bit more reflective and pull back how much we foist on children, whether or not they're born a boy or a girl, and that it's decided, it's assigned for them? What happens to every pregnant mother out there? You're not actually finding out the sex of your baby before your baby's born, because the sex has to be assigned at birth. I mean, there is a preposterous nature of how this ties into a biology curriculum in the classroom next door when the children come out, if we're now saying sex is assigned at birth.
Wow, just think, all those mothers have to repaint those nurseries. Elizabeth,
well,
we're up against...
You couldn't possibly know, because the parents...
I know. Well, you're going to have to use that...
Your child is born.
You're going to have to use that color fluid paint so that you can
change it. Well, how many genders? That's one of my follow-on questions.
Elizabeth,
how many genders are we going to teach?
Elizabeth, we're up. Can you hold on? Because I've got some specific questions on the other side of this break. Can you hold on for the next segment?
I sure can.
All right. Elizabeth Schultz with us, member of the Fairfax County School Board. She's going to continue this conversation with us. Stick around. We're coming back right after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
To Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we've spent a fair amount of time on this in the last few months about, we had the sex ed sit out. Elizabeth Johnson was leading that effort where parents are just, they've had enough of this graphic sex ed curriculum that's being really shoved down the throats of parents and students all across the nation. And it's in Fairfax County. And one of the school board members there that is speaking out for common sense and for parents is Elizabeth Schultz. Elizabeth, thanks for sticking around. A couple of questions specific to this curriculum. Number one is, I wanted to ask you to help our listeners understand, what's the difference between biological sex and sex assigned at birth? It's not like just waiting until they're born to determine what their sex is. It's more than that.
Well, that's a super question to ask. In fact, that was one of my follow-on questions that I want staff to document for us, because our own biology textbooks, that I had, excerpts from in front of me, tell us that biological sex is based on, 46 chromosomes, and we understand that's a DNA genetic makeup between a mother and a father contributing to make a baby that wind up being, either a boy or a girl. And instead, what we're hearing is that in certain areas of the family life education, that we're going to be treating and identifying the word sex or biological sex to mean sex assigned at birth. So we're undoing, the basic biology of what biological sex is, which is your biology makes your sex, and say that it is something that somebody assigns to you at your birth. And so the notion that you can peel this back and make any scientific sense out of it, or that we're going to start teaching, children about the drug from the pharmaceutical, end of things called PrEP that is for, very high-risk promiscuous sexual activity, IV drug users, and sex workers, that somehow makes its way into, as an appropriate topic, into family life education. We're now no longer talking about the human biology and human reproductive organs and teaching children about, the natural law of their bodies. Now we're teaching children how to have sex. And oh, by the way, if you have very, very risky sex, here's a drug that there are no FDA protocols, no clinical guidelines for anyone under the age of 18, but we're going to go ahead and make sure that we teach you about it every single year of high school. This is we're getting so far afield from educating children about the biology of their bodies to teaching children, you know, the access to and activities related to sexual encounters with other people. And that is something that parents simply aren't aware of. They are on their daily activities. They're so overwhelmed just, you know, trying to maybe work and raise their family and run a youth activity, whether it's sports or scouts or whatever it is, that one more document that comes home that says, if you want to sign your child out of FLE, you're like, yeah. And by the time it comes around, you're not even aware of it. And you certainly aren't aware of the level of detail that we're getting into with these children that frankly should be handled between the parents, a child in need who may have gender dysphoria and may need medical attention or psychological attention if they need it, that's between them and their medical professionals, but that mm-hmm. somehow the public school system is becoming the vehicle for transmitting that information to all and under, you know, nebulous definitions.
So, Elizabeth, where is this curriculum coming from? Who's driving this?
Well, this is, in this case, you know, the people on the Family Life Education Curriculum Committee, which I said was a committee of 33, which are a cross-section of basically largely activists and activists on the left end of the spectrum, or people who are not actively engaged because there were a lot of abstentions in the votes. So, you know, you saw vote after vote, 22 to 2, 22 to 2, 19 to 2. So you saw right there, you don't have a representative swath of what your community looks like. You have who's been able to angle their way onto a committee that is going to write the curriculum, and the staff says, well, it's not our job to necessarily present the curriculum from a staff perspective. It's just to bring you the recommendations of the committee. So there's not even a medical doctor on the committee. There's not a school board member, which is the recommendation of the Virginia Board of Education.
It would seem to me that these, as you described as activists, that they're getting their lead from somewhere, that they're not just creating this stuff, you know, out of a vacuum, but this is probably the way that groups like Planned Parenthood and others are getting this curriculum, at least a draft model of this, into their hands, giving them ideas of what to craft.
Right. So you have people who are unelected, who are unaccountable. Their votes, they actually voted against taking a roll call vote, so nobody would know how they voted. So the individual members of this committee who are volunteers who get, you know, placed onto this curriculum, not mm-hmm. paid staff, not paid curriculum experts, not medical doctors, but activists get themselves onto a committee. They work on a curriculum for over a year to get it exactly how they want it. It gets dumped in front of the board, and of course, you know, with a board that leans, you know, completely one way
right.
instead of, you know,
Elizabeth,
having any balance. You know,
we're up against another break, but let me tell you, we're going to follow back up with you as we track this on the school board. Thanks so much for being with us today, Elizabeth.
Hey, to your local school board. It's more important than anything else.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines here. We're going to talk about, we're going to continue the conversation that we were having with Elizabeth, but I'm going to have it with you. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and I know we had more callers than we could get to, because I think more and more parents are becoming aware of what's happening in the schools. We actually had a number of teachers call. So we're going to talk about this radical sex ed policy. Or policies, they're not all the same, but they have their same root that are being pushed in schools all across the nation. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, if you want to get in on the conversation. You know, one of the things, it sounds very, we're going to move away from biological sex to sex assigned at birth. I mean, almost sounds innocuous. I mean, all right, so they pop out, it's a boy. Well, not so fast. Again, this is genetic. You're determined whether or not you're a male or female. That's not where they're going. And plus, when you say, well, we can no longer determine until it's assigned at birth. Well, how long is that period? Is it 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours? Is it 5 years? One thing that you can know for certain is when you deviate from truth, in this case science, and you ever really thought about how the left is always bashing conservatives, especially Christians, for being anti-science? Doesn't look like we're the ones anti-science. I mean, when it comes to life, when it comes to gender, all those things, marriage, reproduction. But so these terms, when you deviate from truth, when you deviate from facts, and you say, well, it's going to be the sex assigned at birth. Well, pretty soon that could be birth to 50 years, or as we've seen, even longer. Just as you can't trust anything they say, because if you placate them and you capitulate and say, okay, well, all right, we'll give you that, I mean, you've heard the old phrase, you give an inch, take a mile. Well, that's exactly what they do. And let me, one of the points that Elizabeth was making was about parental notification. And this has long been an issue. As she was talking about, if a student is going to go on a field trip to the zoo or to the symphony, I don't know where they go these days, you know, I don't know, given some of this curriculum, maybe it's down to the local, brothel. Who knows? But they have to opt in. Okay, parents have to actually send a note saying, yes, I approve of Johnny going to XYZ. Well, not the same with curriculum like this. It actually can influence, and as Elizabeth was talking about how this over-sexualization of our kids could be leading to this sexting and all of these other things that are happening. That's not the same standard. Parents don't have to opt in. They have to opt out. Well, what if the slip never comes home to opt them out? Or parents who are distracted? Or, you know, little Johnny doesn't bring it home. I want to read a memo. I've read this before on the program, but it's in this context. I think it's very instructive. This came from one of our pastors, one of our Watchmen pastors in California, that bastion of liberalism. this is from the Orange County Department of Education. It's dated March the 29th, 2018. And it's actually very similar, different name, but the California Healthy Youth Act. And it's one of these sex ed programs. And I'm just going to read it to you. It's very short. Members of the board have asked several questions about the California Healthy Youth Act. Attached is a comprehensive legal opinion discussing in detail, the legal issues involved. In short, Education Code Section 51938 allows a parent or guardian to excuse their child from all or part of comprehensive sexual health education and HIV education. However, Education Code Section 51932B states that Section 51938 and the chapter entitled the California Healthy Youth Act does not apply to instruction materials or programming that discusses gender, gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, discrimination, harassment, bullying, intimidation, relationships, or family, and does not discuss human reproductive organs and their functions. Therefore, parents who disagree with the instructional material related to gender, gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation may not excuse their children from this instruction. However, parents are free to advise their children they disagree with some or all of the information presented in the instructional program and express their view on these subjects to their children. End quote. Oh, that's so generous of them. They're allowing the parents to say, I disagree with what your teacher is saying. Can you imagine the audacity of, I'm at a loss for words. Just to say, well, your parents cannot pull their kids out of this instruction, but we'll allow them to tell their children that they disagree with what we're saying. This is how far public education has come in this country. And Elizabeth's parting words there, as we were up against the break, was to parents all across America to be informed and be involved. Because if it hasn't, and we've talked to a number of parents, community leaders who have said it has come to our community. They tried to bring it under the radar, but we found out about it. If it's not in your community, it will be. And parents, you have a responsibility to protect your children and the children of your community from this garbage. It's worse than garbage. All right, let's go to Kenny in Oklahoma. Kenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Sounds like we've got a bad connection. Hopefully you can hear me. Thank you for what you're doing, sir.
I can hear you fine. Go right ahead, Kenny. Thanks for calling.
Okay, Tony, is this homosexual transgender perversion in every single elementary school in the United States of America to a certain degree?
I don't think it's there yet, but that's their goal. Their goal is to get this curriculum into every school in America, and it is the parents' responsibility to make sure that they fail in their mission to indoctrinate our children into this. What is it's lunacy. It's absolutely lunacy.
Where are the pastors of America? Where is Franklin Graham? Where are the prominent people? Why are they not getting together and doing something about this?
Well, many of them are. Kenny, in fact, Franklin is out in California now doing a multi-city tour out there. But in fact, it was in North Carolina. It was a pastor that kind of blew the cover on this curriculum in North Carolina and got it out of their school district. And Kenny, the reality is, and we actually talked about this, I think, week before last on the program where we had a teacher call in and making a very valid point. And I don't disagree with the point, nor do I disagree with the fact that it's occurring, that many Christians have pulled their kids out of schools. And so they've kind of, you know, written off the public schools, and there's no one there watching. And so I think it's important that while I don't encourage anyone to send their kids to the public schools, I do encourage us to go into the public schools as teachers, as administrators, as school board members, and protect the other kids that are in these schools from this pernicious agenda that is being pushed by the left. Kenny, thanks so much for calling.
Tony, what about the evangelicals that have the ear of President Trump? Are they trying to get him to do something about this terrible situation?
Yeah, good point, Kenny. In fact, I mean, you've seen the Department of Education to the degree that it has influence over the the local schools, and we believe that this should be controlled by parents locally, but they have removed what Obama put in place in his final days about ordering the bathroom use, where anyone could use whatever bathroom, men could use little girl bathrooms, they could shower together, and so on and so forth. So that has changed. So that's one positive development. Kenny, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. All right, let's move on here. Let's go to Justin in North Carolina. Justin, welcome to Washington Watch.
All right. Hey, Tony, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it, sir.
What's on your mind today?
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Go right ahead.
All right. Thank you, sir. So, it's really ironic that you're talking about this. I've been, not really struggling with this issue, but I'm an educator myself. I'm a math teacher. And, at a local high school. Actually, I teach in the county right beside Cumberland County. They got rid of the Planned Parenthood curriculum that's going to be indicted. I actually teach in the county just over from it. So I was very glad to hear that got shot down. Tony, as a math educator, math follows a logical sequence, events. You have to do one thing before you get to another. And so I try to think about this and put it in perspective logically. And, if we allow children or allow someone to identify as something than what they are biologically, then logically, to me at least, it makes sense that, if you have a person that identifies as a cat one day, they wake up one morning and they say, I feel like a cat today, then, for all intents and purposes, if something medical were to happen to you, then you shouldn't go to a hospital to receive services. You should go to your local vet to receive services. And, I have a feeling that if I were to bring that up as an argument, that some people would look at me and say, well, that's just ridiculous. And so it's trying to put these pieces together of, and trying to think of, I don't struggle with this issue. I seek to understand so that when I have a conversation with someone who struggles with this, at what point in time, does it make sense to identify yourself as something that you're not, clearly? So that's just the point I wanted to make, Tony. Thank you for having me.
Excellent point. I mean, as you were saying that, I'm thinking about it, I know they'll mock at that idea, but I mean, look, if you are a male, genetically you are a male, biologically you're a male, and you say, well, I'm not a male, I'm a female. I mean, what's to keep you from saying that you're an animal? I mean, think about this for a minute. Somebody says, well, look, I'm a bird man, all right? I'm a bird man, and I'm going to jump off this building and fly. Do you have a responsibility to stop that person from jumping off that building? I mean, you know that they don't have feathers, and they can't fly. But you would hurt their feelings if you said, no, wait, Fred, you're not a bird man. You're a man, but you're not a bird, and you can fly. But out of respect for not hurting his feelings, you go ahead and you let him jump. And that was the end of Fred. That's, again, the lunacy. Because the reality is, when we allow kids, people, to identify with something other than reality, it is ultimately hurting themselves. And so, yes, we might hurt their feelings by saying, no, Bob, you're not a girl. You're a male. That might hurt their feelings, but in the long run, it might save their lives. And this is, it's the shaming that is taking place of people who stand up and appeal to science, appeal to logic, and so we're growing silent. Folks, the last thing we should do is be silent about the truth. Look, this is self-evident. And so we should not allow, no matter how loud they grow, how vicious they become, allow the LGBTQ community and their allies on the left to indoctrinate our children with a lie that literally can destroy their lives. Parents, you have responsibility, not beginning first with your own children, your own home, but pastors, as was mentioned a few moments ago, you have a responsibility to the community to stand up, even if it means you might lose a few members or you might have an editorial written about you in the local paper, or maybe they might spray paint your church. Yeah, I know we live in a day when people are mean and they're hateful to those who speak truth. But you know what? We have to have a greater reverence for God and his truth than the fear of man. All right, out of time for today. Sorry we didn't get to the rest of the calls, but had some great callers today, and I'm sure we'll be back on this topic because it's not going away. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.